By the way, did you see the? I only watched this skit, the SNL skit with Beavis and Butthead.
Oh my god,
it was so funny,
dude.
He's like, "That's obviously Beavis."
Yeah, that was fun. But then when she turned around and saw Mikey Day as Butthead,
yeah, and she couldn't stop.
And she could not stop. She was beating herself up about
yeah,
it. Yeah, because she's like, "My job is to not."
I know, but
break.
Like, we like it when.
Whoa, I love when people
we
break.
Like it when you break when it's like a really silly thing. Yeah. I don't like a Jimmy Fallon who's who used to
always
ruin
breaks.
Skits by breaking.
Yeah.
But when it's a silly, where it's not even like that, it's necessarily that funny, but it's so silly that you can't keep it in. Like, those are my favorite. Like, in the Californians, when he's like,
oh my God. Yeah, I love that.
And Bill Hader just couldn't keep it.
Yeah, because Kristen Wiig is like, start. Like, the way she does that is just so great. And he rarely breaks. He'll break when he's Stefan, but you know the
that he
story behind
yeah,
that
he
is
gets,
that John Mulaney, like, wrote things last minute.
Exactly. We're doing some Fuentes today. It's been a while since we had some Fuentes. I went with an old favorite that I haven't had in years. I can't remember if they discontinued it in stores or they discontinued it online. They did something weird with it, but this is the Fuente, the Magnum R Rosado, which is always a big favorite of mine. It got really high ratings when it first came out. It uses a Rosado wrapper out of Ecuador. And then I gave you, I believe that's just the standard Chateau, like the natural or the regular Chateau with the Maduro wrapper, which I believe is broadleaf. Nice. But that's like just the standard Fuente Churchill.
Churchill, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, dude, this is, everyone talks about Opus and Añejo and Casa Fuente. This is like, these are the cigars I think that make Fuente what it is that their baseline stuff, their $6, $7, $8, $9 stuff is so good and sells so well. Like, we never, you know, there's never deals on Fuente, and they just sell. They're really, really, like every level of their portfolio is just quality, good stuff. I mean, I used to smoke the 858s, and they're still, obviously the price has gone up, but the 858s, I think, are still like $7 or $8. I'd smoke that cigar all day, all of them.
From the... my father-in-law really enjoys the short stories.
Yeah, the Hemingway one.
And yeah, and I remember when I first like started here, I bought him a box and he gave me one. And I don't know, small cigars, I feel like to me, I don't want to say they're a waste for me. They're not, no cigar is a waste.
Oh,
but
excuse me.
I just feel like I like sitting around and smoking for a while, but I was able to actually like enjoy it more because I wasn't constantly chain smoking like I do with other cigars, you know, like. Yeah. And I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the shape. I enjoyed the smoking experience. Not and really. He likes them because he says he doesn't want to sit like he can't sit for 2 hours and enjoy a cigar when he should.
Isn't he retired?
Yeah, yeah, but
what's he got going on?
I don't know.
He's still dipping in that spy life. This is your dad or your father-in-law?
My father-in-law, not my dad. No, that'd be funny if it was my dad. But no, I really enjoy the short story a lot. And the Hemingway line.
I mean, the Hemingway and the Don Carlos, those were the Opus before the Opus. I mean, Don Carlos was the cigar at one point that you had to like wait in line for and it was limited to get.
When did that come out?
80s.
80s.
Yeah, mid to late 80s, I would guess. I think the regular Opus came out, and I want to say it was 93.
Mm-hmm.
But Fuente is just, they're a very odd company. Like, most other companies fall into a space, you know, they're all unique in their own, but they fall like your General Altadis, Davidoff falls into a space. Drew Estate is unique because they kind of fall into two worlds of like big company corporate, but also like still boutique and like guys wearing t-shirts and hats. Then you have your boutique companies, then you have your like bigger companies, but not corporate behemoths. So like your Olivas, your Perdomos, you know, those guys. Everyone kind of falls into a niche. Fuente really doesn't because they're a big manufacturer, but they're still family owned. And they just, the way they market, the way they sell their products, the way they make their products is just very different from everyone else. You never really see them run deals on anything. They don't do a lot, they don't really need to do a lot of promotion on their own. It's kind of that brand that sells itself. I would like to see a new line. Like, last time we saw a new national brand from them was the Casa Cuba, and that, God, that's got to be almost 10 years ago, something like that. All their other releases they've had are these different limited edition Opus that are kind of just crazily, considering the regular Opus is still so in demand, and those usually retail for between like 17 and 19. They're coming out with these Opus. I can't even keep track of them all. And some of them are like $40, $50, $100. So listen, that's great. You want to, you know, and maybe they're at just full capacity with everything else. So they only have capacity to make these short run special projects. But with their new factory in Nicaragua, which, I don't know, maybe another year or two they should be done with. We might be able to see some really cool stuff from them out of Nicaragua. And I saw like the drawings of like what the factory is going to look like. It looks crazy.
Oh, nice.
It looks
yeah.
really cool. It looks like a massive like hacienda, like a Spanish style like how like very traditional but upscale Spanish style.
Oh, there is
like
there
something
any news
like
on
something
them?
Like how... Zorro would go rob the governor in. Like very hot, like yeah. a very nice. You know,
is there
style.
Any like news on it? Like how big it is, how big it's going to
yeah,
be
it is.
Or anything?
Let me see. Go over here. They announced it a while ago.
Yeah.
And I think they only very recently went into like, not production, but development.
My buddy went out to Vegas with his brother this past weekend mm-hmm. and he sent me a picture of him smoking an Opus X in the Fuente lounge.
Right. Okay, you know what he paid for that?
Yeah. He told me $50. And he's like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that looks beautiful.
It looks like they started construction. So this article from Aficionado was last April. So yeah, they announced it in 2018.
Wow.
And it was to be called Gran Fabrica de Tabacos La Bella y la Bestia, which translates to Beauty and the Beast. They broke ground in 2022. And now construction has gone into high gear. They're expecting, this is last year, the construction is expected to conclude in end of 2023, but is expecting a ribbon cutting ceremony in early spring of 24, which is right around now.
Wow.
I don't know if they gave any details on how big it's supposed to be. No. No, like size or anything, but I mean, it looks. But I mean, even if you look at like Chateau Fuente and the DR, I mean, it's just the rose, the flower bed they have that's in the shape of the Opus X logo. I mean, yeah. like they go all out. I'm sure it's very similar to like Davidoff. Like everything is high end, clean.
It's really interesting to me that this brand specifically, and I'm sure there's other brands, but like, yeah, they're letting their first few lines when that came out like 30, 40 years ago, pretty much speaking for themselves all the way until now. When in, you know, they're the, you see other companies that are putting out 3 to 5 lines, you know, including limited editions a year.
There's been, ever since I've been going to the trade show and I went to my first one in 2015, ever since that, they have had a big sign at their booth at the trade show that says no new customers. Only a few people buy from Fuente directly. I don't want to get into it because I don't know. But yeah, you can't just like own a shop and just go to the Fuente booth and like start buying from them. It just doesn't work that way. And it's weird because they operate on the back end like that, which you would think is like a similar way, like someone like a Dunbarton, like a small boutique manufacturer operates. But then on the front end, they're a behemoth. Every cigar store and gas station, like everyone has Fuente and they're constantly moving through them. It's just very interesting. They, besides making great cigars, which of course they do, they understood long-term marketing, I think better than probably just about anyone else in the industry.
Yeah.
A lot of boutique companies do it really well. Foundation, Crown Heads, Dunbarton, a lot of these guys. But they understand, I don't want to say short-term marketing, but marketing in like for the new SKU, for the thing. Here's how I market the, now get the hell out, Lancero, or leave me the hell alone, Lancero. Here's how I market this year's Las Calaveras. And that works. And that's all you can really do when you're a company that size. They understood long-term marketing better than anyone because the policies on how they want to sell and market their cigars have been almost unchanged in decades, and it still works. People still flock. We still sell through. It's still one of our biggest vendors. We still sell through their stuff, and we never run deals on it. There's no co-opt goods hardly ever. they just,
anything will change with them, or is it just like they're so ingrained in
change?
Yeah,
you know,
like no one will ever get sick. Like not, I don't want to say sick and tired of their ways, but I mean, I feel like they're just so ingrained.
They keep you interested with these new opuses. They keep you interested without having to do anything crazy. You know, they keep you, you know, and they're still in the consistency. I mean, a sun-grown Chateau is the same yesterday as it was 10 years ago. And you know, obviously the price has gone up, but it's gone up commiserate with everything else. It's not like all of a sudden they're astronomically more expensive. And but even something like the 858 sun-grown, the 858 is a size he makes millions of, and it uses a sun-grown wrapper that he uses on millions of other cigars. But just that combination of wrapper and size, he releases like once a year. And the same price, it's still like $8.99. Releases it once a year in very limited batches and sells that like that. Can't find them.
Probably helps, you know, too with, I guess, inventory of their crop and tobacco, even if there's a shortage, right?
Yeah, well, they've had they've had some interesting pitfalls. There was a barn fire one year that destroyed like a lot of crop. A couple years ago, they had a container stolen. That was big news, like a whole container of like off the docks in, I guess, Tampa or Miami, wherever the shipment came in. Looks like a whole container of like stuff was just was stolen. So they've had like a couple of these setbacks. But I think with them opening up in Nicaragua, we're obviously going to see some nice new Nicaraguan blends because they'll have the room and the facilities to facilitate that without having to kind of overbear their Dominican factory. But I also think we might even see increased quantities of some of their Dominican cigars because I don't necessarily think that the limit of them is the tobacco. I think it might just be the production.
Yeah.
Like they just don't have enough people or enough space to produce them. So sending some of that tobacco down to Nicaragua and having that, you know, at least for their core line stuff, we should never be out of 858s again. You know, and there's times where we go months without, and this is a cigar that should be as readily available as like a Romeo 1875, you know, like it should just, it's just there all the time. But very, very interesting. I met Carlito a few times. I met Cynthia. She was really nice. But I met Carlito a few times. Very interesting guy. Very nice. The first time I met him, he didn't know who I was. Nobody. I think I might have just started in corporate. Uh-huh. And I met him about a year and a half later. I don't think he knew me from the podcast, but I met him at the Fuente Mania out in PA. And I said, I'm from, you know, I work for JR Marketing. And then I talked to him for like 15 minutes.
Awesome.
Really, really nice guy. But yeah, they're just there's an air of mystery around them. It's very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. And you never really see people from them like move into other companies or something like that. Like very rarely do you see that happening.
Well, it probably just goes to show you that people love working there. Or they keep it under wraps completely, you know. But it definitely goes to show that they're a tight-knit company. And you know, a company like this really is interesting to me because it's because I feel like in a world where we live in with everything, you have to kind of like, what's the new thing? What's the new thing? And I know you said like, you know, they keep coming out with these variations of the Opus X, right? And that line has a cult following to its own, right? But still, like how they're able to sell, you know, this still, or, you know, people are still gravitating towards like the Don Carlos.
It's the trickle down effect. It's you keep them. It's like, what's the whiskey? Pappy. When people are talking about Pappy, they're really talking about the Pappy Van Winkle, like the 10-year-old or the whatever. They have the Rip Van Winkle, which before it really, really, like at the beginning of this like bourbon boom, you know, right when I got into bourbon, when you can find it, a bottle of the Rip Van Winkle was like $80, $70.
Pulled the trigger on that.
And I bought a bottle once. I split it with some friends. And it was like good. It was like nice. At the time, it was probably worth exactly the amount of money we paid for it.
Yeah.
Now I just think, Pappy. And I'm not a bourbon expert. I'll get Jim on here. He'll do the whole breakdown. I think it's very, very, I mean, it's all secondary market, very overpriced. But it's the trickle-down effect. You know Pappy Van Winkle, the 20-year is, you know, $500 a bottle and you can't find and all this stuff. So it trickles down to when you get to the, like, the Rip Van Winkle. It's like it's still has enough of the prestige from up here that people who really maybe don't know a lot about bourbon are still going to flock to it. Now, I'm not saying people who don't know about cigars, but like the prestige of Opus X as the premier, most sought after in the world trickles down to all their other lines so that, because generally what happens with a brand like this, especially if you're not actively pushing all your core lines, is the generation that smokes it will eventually either stop smoking or move on. And the new generation doesn't really know. Well, the new generation, they see on Instagram and they see on Half Wheel these crazy Opus releases. And then the trickle-down effect is they go into a store. Hey, do you have this? Obviously, no, we don't have that. But we have all the other Fuentes. And that's how they stay relevant. It's incredible. Now, I might be making this up. This might just be by chance how it worked out for them. But if they strategize like this, it's pretty brilliant.
It is.
It's pretty brilliant.
Because I think you can see that.
It'd be really cool if I just made that entire strategy up. That's a phenomenal strategy to do.
And it, I mean,
how many people buy other Nikes now because of Jordans?
Oh, exactly. I mean, I think the whole shoe market is because of Jordan, you know, and the brand that he put out originally, you know, a lot of people like playing in Kobe's and whatnot. But yeah,
but that's the thing. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's the best basketball shoe. No. Pappy Van Winkle is not the, I mean, there's,
it's the allure
of it. I think there's more for a basketball shoe. There's probably a more like consensus on like
what's the best shoe.
Because it's more like physical, like technical.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what has the best feel to it? What moves the best?
Because me saying what's the best shoe is not the same as an NBA player saying what the best shoe is, because I'm not playing a game in it every,
I'm sure there's more of a consensus among NBA players on like what is the actual best shoe to wear. Like, I think they all agree, like, don't wear Converse.
No,
But when it comes to bourbon, it's just so like it's everyone's opinion.
It's
such a preference. But it's similar. I mean, dude, I wear Nikes now, and my mom hates Nike. But I wear Nikes now, and I have two pairs of Jordans. I got the retro, like the Jordan 1s. I got a blue and a red pair. But then, like, I have all other, you know, not all other. I have two other pairs of Nikes. Like, I have a dirty everyday pair and a nicer everyday pair. And I think we're just getting to that time of year where I'm going to throw out the older everyday pair. My current nicer everyday pair becomes my dirty everyday pair, and then I buy a new nicer everyday pair. But that's a trickle-down effect.
Yep.
The white Nike tennis shoes, they're not more comfortable than anything else. They're not more comfortable than Adidas or New Balance. They don't necessarily like look better. It's not like they look fancier or nicer, but it's Nike. It's not a Jordan, but it's Nike. This is not an Opus X, but it's Fuente.
Exactly. And I think if people
and that's
are,
why
are
they're,
true
they're,
to...
Go their, ahead. Yeah. Their tagline is Fuente is Fuente.
Yeah.
And then the other one is you can't rush the hands of time.
I like that one.
Unless you just go like this.
But I mean, or actually, just
technically by smoking, you're kind of rushing your time.
Oh yeah. When you're smoking.
when you're smoking or drinking a lot, time is moving a little bit quicker than for everyone else.
But yeah, I mean, it's just because I feel like the world we're living in, and I feel like I'm even trying to adjust to it with the, you know, what's the next best thing. And obviously I come from movies or I love, you know, sports and whatnot, but movies is like, when you look at some of the best filmmakers and they're like, you know, Tarantino, for example, like he's only he directed 10 films. I wonder if he came out in today's day and age, would he have like 30, nine? He's about to direct 10. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause Kill Bill was one movie.
Yeah.
It's cool. To be honest here. I want to buy his book.
Which one?
Cinema Speculation or something like that. It's like his
I
was reading about The Unforgiven the other day, the movie.
Yeah.
I love that movie. And then I started reading about like other Western movies, and then I saw a few like quotes that he had from this book, because obviously he's a big Western guy. And I'm like, I should buy it. It's probably a really interesting book to see his perspective on things. But anyway, go ahead.
No, just what, like, you look at some of my favorite directors. I think like Paul Thomas Anderson, I don't think he's directed more than 10. So you have like filmmakers who grew up
He was 80s, 90s. He was, No Country. Blood.
There Will Be Blood.
Yeah, There Will Be Blood.
I feel like now, and I'm on a small independent level, but like it's everyone's like, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? And I think you just see that with everything. You see it with music. You see it, you know, you see
I can't believe Taylor Swift just released a new album.
Double like, album.
The world is still talking. Her, I can't even get into her. I don't blame any of my issues with her on her.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think, what's the name of this album that came out? The
Tortured Poet Society.
Like, how much of your own butt are you sniffing? The Tortured Poets.
Yeah.
It's almost like, unless she's doing it ironically, which she might be, because she is very smart and witty.
Yeah.
But that literally sounds like some kid in college. Like, I'm such a tortured artist, and the world is so... Like, I really hope that she did it more ironically than, like, this is what it's like being me.
Yeah, I mean, it might be the theme of the album, too, which, you know, a lot of people are doing that. So it's nice to see, like, Fuente. I don't know if there's any other companies that are like that. They're really just being like, we put out bangers in the beginning, and like, this is, like, who we are.
Nobody this old. Like, there's companies who kind of, you know, like, Ferry Otego does a very similar thing where they don't release, like, a lot of new core lines. They're really a new cigar, like, every year. They like to just focus on the ones they have for a couple of years and give them some legs. But I mean, Fuente, how they handle it. I mean, it's, and I don't know if anyone can do like that anymore because.
Is it because of what I'm bringing up, or is it just a mixture?
And how
of
the
like,
market has changed, you know, like I think it was Nick or one of our guys that we talked to a lot said it, where at, you know, you used to try in the old days, your goal was to be someone's everyday cigar. They're buying a box a month.
Yeah.
Now your hope is to just get in somebody's rotation. I don't know if newer companies, I don't know whether if either it's not their goal or it's just not sustainable in the current market. I don't know any newer companies, when I say newer, past 10 years, that have made cigars that are people's daily cigars, where they're just buying, they're going and they're buying a box a month.
Yeah.
You know, it's not really how the, now there's probably, there's some people who do that, but it's not really how the market is anymore, how the market is set up. So the way they were able to kind of become the daily choice for someone, but then still add in this mystique and this marketing strategy for Opus that made it seem so elusive. And like I said, it has that trickle down effect. I don't know if a newer company is going to be able to do that, because step one is, you got to have core lines that are available everywhere that everyone's buying constantly.
Yeah.
And that takes years, and it takes a different environment than we have right now to do that. So other companies could have done it, Altadis, or like, you know, I guess Drew Estate to an extent. You could say, like, you know, things like Undercrown are kind of a trickle down of Liga,
Bravada. Yeah.
I think that's in the Opus model.
Yeah, the Liga definitely is.
But not Ligas are available everywhere. I can, you know, I mean, that's true. They'll run out. They will run out. But like mostly, I've definitely had more Ligas available in my life than Opus, like by a large margin.
I've only been fortunate enough to have Opus when you gave me one right before Peyton was born, and when you, Steve, and Jim went down. Steve doesn't smoke, and he was like, "Here's the Opus." But it's because you guys went to Fuente.
Well, I also told him, like,
give it to Chris. Well, I appreciate
like,
that.
You're not gonna.
Yeah, no, he's not gonna enjoy it. So yeah, I mean, I definitely know what you're saying. Like, you can go to certain shops, and you might see, you know, you'll see Liga more often than not. You know.
Yeah.
But
it's just, I mean, you can write a. I hope someone from Fuente or like some, like, I don't know. I feel like this is a really interesting, you know, theory of how they've marketed. Now, again, that might not have been their strategy all the way through, but it's definitely the effects of whatever they've been doing is this.
Yes.
This is what, however they've been running their company, this is the effect of it. Whether it was their goal or not, this is how it worked out, and it worked out pretty well for them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that being said, we have a few more minutes here, because I am starving.
Yeah, my stomach's growling.
I have a rant.
Okay.
I've been playing a lot of Red Dead Redemption 2.
Okay.
Really good game. Really good game. I'm doing I either play the story mode or I play the online with War Dog, where he's an absolute psycho. I will say that. I don't want to get too much into it. He's just
I mean, with a nickname like shooting. With a nickname like War Dog, like would
I thought, you expect I'm like, oh, dude, we'll go do missions and stuff. Like, we'll go get bounties. He's just shooting everyone. But I talked about, I don't know if I talked about it with you. I talked about it with maybe with Louie or somebody. My problem with games and that a lot of the game, and this was like the biggest game ever.
Yeah, you were saying this, I think. Yep.
It's too realistic. And when I say that, it's like your hair grows in like real time. You got to go get haircuts. If you're in an outfit and you're riding way up north of the mountains and it's cold, you will freeze to death if you do not bring
the proper attire.
Cold weather attire. If you go down to the desert and you're in your cold weather attire, you will sweat and like pass out and like your health will drain.
How does War Dog feel about that too? Like, does he have the same thing? Or
I mean, I don't know how much of the missions and like the story he's doing. he seems to just be wilding.
Yeah.
He seems to just be he's just picking guys off. But you have to, like, if you don't eat enough food, your health will drain and you'll get skinny. If you eat too much food, you'll get fat and your stamina will go down. In the online, like, your horse can die, but then, like, your horse will respawn. In the story, I was racing somebody. There's, like, a side mission. You can race somebody. And I wasn't paying attention because I was, like, looking at my phone. And I looked back, and then I ran my horse, like, straight into a rock, like, at full gallop. And, like, the horse just died and was there on the side of the road with my saddle with all my stuff in it. I had to go rob someone and steal their horse, bring it back to my dead horse, take my saddle and put it on the new horse. If I had just left, let's say I just quit right at that. When I turn the game back on, I will respawn somewhere and my saddle will still be where it is with all my equipment in it. I have to go get it.
God.
Or if you do a mission and you don't have your horse follow you, your horse just stays where it is. It's so realistic. And I'm like, this is like being a real cowboy.
Yeah.
And that's not what we want to do. If I wanted to do that, I'd move to Montana and go be a cowboy.
Yeah.
That life
can't be that fun.
That
right?
life actually stinks.
Yeah.
It's a hard life, especially in old West times. Like, that's why I like The Unforgiven, because I think The Unforgiven, one thing I loved about that movie is that in that movie, it was a Clint Eastwood Western. So you think it's going to be like this big shoot 'em up. It was scary to kill somebody in that movie. Like, it was a big deal to take a life in that movie until the end, which is just awesome.
Yeah.
But, like, it was so realistic in that, like, you know, all those Shane or, you know, the Searchers or, you know, the Shoot It, all the other movies, they're just, you know, wailing and shooting everyone, you know, High Noon. But in The Unforgiven, like, there was that one scene where, like, Morgan Freeman was going to shoot the guy. And he's like, I can't do it anymore. He's like, I can't. It was, like, impactful. That movie, like, really affected me, like, in terms of how I view Westerns, but, like, action movies where, like, this is how it should be. It's horrible to just, like, shoot a guy.
Yeah, most action movies don't have that human element to it.
Exactly. Now, in Red Dead Redemption 2, I'm shooting a lot of guys. I'm shooting everybody. It's like, go get this bounty. Like, go capture this guy alive. Like, alive is worth more money. I'm like, just easier. Here's the other pay. If you go do a bounty, you kill everyone else, and then the guy you need the bounty, you know, takes off running. You chase him down with your horse. You got to lasso him, hog tie him, throw him on the back of your horse. And then as you're going, if guys start chasing you and you either stop or slow down or do too much of a turn, he'll hop off the back of the horse. You got to go get him again.
Yeah.
So just
dead.
Yeah. And then if there's a bounty, like, I can't even, I'm waiting for the dog to get back from his trip. Because if there's a bounty for, like, you know, the Wilson brothers, and there's, like, three of them, I can't do it alone because you either need, another guy because you got to take all the bodies back, or you need to purchase, like, a bounty wagon, and they're, like, $900.
I wasn't even thinking that. I was thinking, how do you, you know, I mean, I guess I haven't played the game, so I don't know if you're, like, sniping them or what.
I can take three. I can handle that part. I got all the best. Because he was, like, a level ahead of me, and then I'm like, dude, when you get back, I'm going to be, now I'm like level, like rank 25. Yeah. I have all my guns. They're all custom, like engraved with like gold.
What was the last good Western film you would say?
Open Range. It's the last one that comes to mind anyway.
Yeah.
Open Range was really, really good. Django, but it's like different.
It's mixed. Yeah, it's a mixture.
It's mixed, but I would put that in there.
Yeah.
I did like, what was the Hateful Eight was good. It was just long.
Yeah, it was very long, yeah.
But that was good too. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like any essence of like an old-timey Western, I would say Open Range was probably. Yeah. And then I know Yellowstone has like element.
Yeah.
Like, there was a show on Netflix maybe 6 or 7 years ago, a Western show with Jeff Daniels was the bad guy. I can't remember what it was, but it was excellent.
I want to look it up really quickly.
Oh,
that
man.
That was like
it
two
was
or
good.
Three seasons, right?
Yeah, it was. No, it was. I only remember one season.
Oh,
like
it
a
might have been
series.
One season. Okay.
Yeah. It was, and he was a, Jeff Daniels was the best. He played such a good bad guy.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember what it was called, but it was, it had another guy in it who's like popular now, but he was still like a character actor at the time.
Godless.
That was excellent. Really, really good. They've had other ones. They did like Bone Tomahawk, but I think that's more of like a horror movie.
Oh, this cast is not too bad. This guy, Jack O'Connell, he played in that movie Unbroken.
About the World War II prisoner.
Yeah. And then this actor, he was in Argo and third season of True Detective, Scoot McNairy.
Scoot McNairy, that's the one I'm talking about. Okay, who's like bigger now.
Yeah.
No, Scoot McNairy is good. He was
seven episodes.
Scoot McNairy was in, he was also in, God, what was that? Awesome movie with Brad Pitt where he was like the mobster.
With James Gandolfini?
With James Gandolfini, yeah. And then the dad from Step Brothers was in it. What the fuck? That was a really good movie, too.
Oh, Killing Them Softly.
Killing Them Softly. He was in He was in Killing Them Softly. But yeah, it had a great cast. It was, and it just, it had everything I was, you know. Yeah.
It had a big gray beard in it.
Yeah. I love a good Western.
I guess that was just a mini series then, right?
Yeah. They did one, but it was very highly acclaimed. There's another one. There's like an African American led Western on Netflix with, but it's got.
Is that Idris Elba?
I think maybe he's in it, but it's got Jonathan Majors in it, and I like it looks good, but I'm like I can't.
It was Idris Elba, then the actor Lakeith Stanfield, and then Jonathan Majors. Yeah.
They did a Magnificent Seven reboot with Denzel Washington a couple years ago. I didn't
see it. I know Chris Pratt was in it.
Yeah, I'm not doing reboots, especially of a movie like that. But I do love a
There's
good
some
Western.
Great Westerns, yeah.
I also...
Shane.
I mean, I love Shane. Shane, The Searchers. My dad loves High Noon.
Yeah.
With, I can't think of his first name. Ford.
Harrison Ford?
No. No, this is
oh, wait.
Old. No, what's it? No, it was, don't tell me what it is. I got to think of it.
All right.
High Noon with, it's not Gary Clark, but it's something like that. Is it Gary?
Can I
give me a hint?
He's mentioned in The Sopranos all the time.
Gary Cooper.
Yes.
Yeah, I knew it was Gary.
Yep. Lloyd Bridges.
Yeah.
And Grace Kelly.
Dude, Lloyd Bridges is like from Airplane.
Yeah.
Grace Kelly was in. Oh yeah, she was the woman in it. Yeah, the Frank Miller and his band. That was a. My dad thought that they could have done a good remake of that. With Harrison Ford, because the guy, like, he wasn't, Gary Cooper was not a tough guy in that. Like, most of that movie is him, like, trying to get other people to help him, like, or, like, planning to run away. And then he finally just has to, like, all right, I guess I just got to do it. And then he does it. And Harrison Ford can kind of portray that.
Yeah.
But, all right, I'm going to eat this table. So
thank you for the cigar.
Of course.
Really good.
Hope you enjoyed it. Thank everyone for watching. Make sure to comment, like, and subscribe. And as always... keep it lit.